this evening is Onas Dvarim. For a variety of reasons, we have, I think, a slightly different sheer style certainly than last week, where we, in a more, I guess, polished or comprehensive way, discussed a particular question, the Iyun. I would like my comments this evening, or the sheer this evening, to be more focusing on a particular Gemara. There's a lot in that Gemara, both halachically and agadically, and, so to speak, haaris, that come out from the halachic and other discussions in this Gemara. But admittedly, no one of the points that we touch, but we'll do it in as much depth as we sometimes do, but we'll rather touch on a few of the points. Right in the beginning of Parshas Bahar, after the discussion of Shemitah and Yovel, you have two psukim right at this Bahar would be on its own in Sheni, which speak about the concept of Ona'ah. Ona'ah means afflicting or hurting someone. So right at the beginning of that Sheni, Pasuk Yedalid, we're told, V'chisimkru mimkar v'amisecha, O kona miyad amisecha, you buy something, you sell something, al tonu ishas achiv, right? You should not aggrieve somebody. And there's a huge discussion halachically what that includes, above and beyond the obvious, which is that you can't be dishonest in business. But that's what's known as the makor for Ona'as Dvarim. Excuse me, Ona'as Mammon. A few psukim later, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, we are then told, Velo sonu ish es amiso, each one of us should not aggrieve our fellow Jew, amiso, v'yareisa me'elokecha, we should fear Hashem, k'ani Hashem elokechem. And this, as we're taught by Rashi and Chazal, is the makor for the notion of Ona'as Dvarim, of not hurting somebody verbally. Again, the halachic prescription, which we all know from human experience, gives lie to the notion of sticks and stones may hurt me, but words may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Halacha has always understood that it's not true. Words can be very, very painful, and in fact, it's an issur d'oraisa to hurt somebody, to aggrieve them in a verbal way. As we'll mention shortly from the Chavetz Chaim, it's very, very common that if you're involved in Onas Dvarim, you're probably also involved in other Averos. Chavetz Chaim points out that very often Lashon Hara is also a violation of Onas Dvarim, but if you'll come up with a case where you're not violating anything else, you still may be violating the notion of Ona'as Dvarim. I mentioned that a lot of the discussion in Chazal and what I want to kind of base my shir on is from a particular Gemara. This is, imagine that we're in Daf Yomi in Perek Hazav. This is really, there's one famous blot in Bab Mitzia, which is the mukker for a lot of this discussion, and I would like therefore to focus our ha'ariz from Rishonim and Achronim, I'll seder this Daf. The Mishnah on Daf Nun Ches Amid Beis tells us the following. Just like we know there can be Ona'as Mammon, you could hurt somebody, afflict them financially. Kach Ona'as Dvarim. You can even hurt somebody verbally. For example, says the Mishnah, Lo Yomar Lo Bakama Chapeit Zeh, Hu Ena Rosa Likach. You shouldn't ask a person, how much does this cost? You shouldn't go to a shop and ask for the price if you have no intention of buying it. Furthermore, says the Mishnah, Im Haya Bal Tshuva, don't remind him of his ways. In Hu Ben Gerim, he's the child of Gerim. Lo Yomer Lo Zochar Maaseh Avosecha. Right? Not even your own Maaseh. Just, you know, who do you think you are? You know, when my Zeta was learning in the mirror in Shanghai, you know, your Zeta was whatever. You're Ben Ger. That's also a terrible thing. So the Gemara commenting on this Mishnah says the following, Tana Rabbanim, quoting our pasuk, Lo sonu ish es amiso, ba'onas dvarim, al kasam adaber, ata omer ba'onas dvarim, o enu el ba'onas mamon. Are we sure that that's talking about onas dvarim? Maybe that's talking about onas mamon. The Gemara clarifies, kishuhu omer v'chisim kru memper la'amisecho, k'no miyad amisecho, hare onas mamon, omor. No, because we know that four psukim earlier already discussed onas mamon. So what must the second pasuk be referring to? Ona'as Dvarim. Okay, so the Gemara just reviews why that, even though it's somewhat of a vague pasuk, and in fact there's a discussion of what the etymology of Ona'ah is. I was using the article translation of aggrieved. It's not such a simple thing to translate, but that's why there's a little bit of a discussion of the Gemara, but be that as it may, we confirm that that is the makor. So the Gemara then goes on to elaborate some of the examples. Ketzad, what is an example? So he tells us, Im haya ba'al tshuva, al yomar lo zuchar masecha rishon. Im haya ben gerim, al yomar lo zuchar masecha avosecha. Again, just those are two complete reiterations of the Mishnah. Then the Gemara gives a little bit more of an elaboration. In Hayager, Ubo Lilmo Torah, not the child, but an actual ger comes to shear and wants to learn Torah. Al Yomar Lo, don't tell him. Hash Achol Nedelos Shreifos Shkatzin VeRamasim Ubo Lilmo Torah Shemar Piagura. How can you learn Torah? You're going to put Torah in the words in your mouth, the same mouth that a year ago was eating treif and doing all sorts of terrible things. Right? Now you would. One rule of thumb is that every example is would have been avoided with common sense. Who would talk about this to somebody? The answer is people. The answer is people. People say all sorts of things, and therefore we have to be very, very careful. Furthermore, Gemara continues, Imhayu Yisurin Ba'an Alav. Again, really insensitive. Somebody has terrible, terrible Yisurin, health issues, financial issues. Chalayim Ba'an Alav, Chayim Kavir's Ba'an, he has to bury his children. Right? Quotes from Eliphaz, right? He tries to help Eov, basically telling him, you should know Eov, don't worry, it's all your fault. Like, that's what he did, that's what it says in Sefer Eov, and the Gemara here quotes the Pasuk. It's a problem. Another example, which overlaps, you see, with financial, you see, this can be blurred. Hello, guys? Im hayuch amorin. Some donkey drivers come to you and say, we need tvua for our donkey. Don't say, go over to the 5 and 10 store when you know that they don't sell it. You're just gonna, you know, it's like a childhood prank. You know, you're going to send them around the block looking. Again, but people do these things. Chazal said that. Furthermore, Yehuda Omer, Yosef Omer, I'm not sure who that is. Af lo yidla ein av alamechach b'shesh ein lo damim. Right, don't go into a store very interested in something when you know you're not going to buy it. You don't have money for it. Shehari adavar moser lelev. And here's an important catch-all. Says the Gemara, all of these things are adavar ha-moser lelev. In other words, if you innocently gave advice to go to that store to buy the tefua, you really thought they had it, so there was nothing wrong with doing it. If you really thought you were going to buy the thing and walked in, right? So the very same action could be a problem or it might not be. What's the difference? How do we know? Only in your heart. Dover's the muscle of the leg. Depends on what your intention is. And it's a bit, how do we, and what's our key to that? Says the Gemara, call Dover, muscle of the leg, ne'amar ba'ov yereisim elokecha. The fact that the Torah interjects here, not by the Onas Mammon case, interjects here, B'yareisim Elokecha, so that shows that we're talking about something that only Elokecha would know, as the Rishonim explained. Only Hashem would know, i.e. something that's in your heart, what your intentions were. The Gemara then concludes, this part, we'll stop in a minute to review what we've seen until now. The Gemara then adds, until now we've had halachic examples and explication of the halacha, examples of Onas Mammon. Now, once it's mentioned this, the erasing of Elokecha, that's a segue, you know, it's actually a pretty tight connection as Gemara connections go, to go from the halacha to the agarata. Just like the erasing of Elokecha taught us a certain halachic detail, says the Gemara, it also teaches us that it's dafka by Anas Devarim that it's said, because Anas Devarim is more serious and more severe even than Anas Mammon. After all, Rabbi Elazar Omar, Zebu Gufo, Zebu Mamono. Right? One thing is money. How important is money? We can all survive without money. But a personal affliction, a personal hurt, is much worse. And on a related point of Shumbar Nachmani Amar, Ze Nitan Lihi Shavon, Ze Lo Nitan Lihi Shavon. Right? Money can also be returned and repaid. Right? As I said in the Drusha 2 weeks ago, quoting the famous Maisa from the Secretary of Labor, President Reagan, who after he was vindicated on all 100 counts, Mamish, you can't get a better vindication than he got. He walked out onto the steps of the federal courthouse. The press was waiting for him to be all exalted. And he looked at them with a broken heart after this big exoneration. And he said, where do I go to get my reputation back? Certain things can never be taken back. Certain things can never be repaid. Money can be repaid. A reputation, a hurt, can never be... You know, you can do something, but you can never fully repay it. That's a fact. That's a fact. And that's what Chazal tells us. And that's why, again, it's adopted by Anas Devarim, they say, as opposed to Anas Mammon. you take a look, even though not all the examples are from Mechira, again, it's interesting that some of the cases about Aras Devarim relate to a financial context, Mekach HaMemkar context. And it's in light of that, interestingly enough, that the Rambam basically paraphrases everything we just saw in the Gemara in Hilchos Mechira. The Rambam in Hilchos Mechira in Perek Yedalad, Halachos Yud Beis through Yud Ches, six Halachos, bang, bang, bang. The Rambam just gives you point by point everything we just saw in this Gemara, including the ones that have nothing to do with Mechira, about a ger, and about a Baal Tshuva, etc. As I mentioned, the Chavetz Chaim in his introduction in the Psicha, Lavin Yud Gimel, points out that in many, if not most cases that you say Lashon Hara about somebody, you're also going to be over on Aras Devarim, because you're going to be, you know, in the one in a million case where the person you say Lashon Hara about doesn't mind, it still could be Aser for other things, but maybe then if you didn't hurt him, maybe that's talking about Aras Devarim. But in any case, if you really hurt him, he's embarrassed, it hurt him, upset him, distressed him, you said Lashon Hara about him, so for the Chofetz Chaim, that's also a different Avera, that's called Aras Devarim. Now it's interesting, I want to mention a diuk that I have seen that some Achronim have in a number of Rishonim, which is very interesting. If you take a look in the Ramban of the Torah on our Parsha, or you take a look, for example, on the Sefer, in the Sefer Chinuch, on the positive mitzvah of V'yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, which is the flip side of this, you're violating V'yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha when you hurt somebody, it's meduyak, one could say, potentially, and these were shown him, that you only violate these averos intentionally. I'll give you just the two quick citations. The Ramban says, in our parsha, if you are ma'ane l'da'as, if you afflict someone l'da'as, sounds like intentionally, then you're over. Right? Sounds like perhaps the diuk is what if it was unintentional. Or for that matter, the Sefer HaChinuch, when it comes to V'yatrach HaKamocha, says, when are you mevatalit? If you do X, Y, and Z, oh, or C-R-O, Shum Davar, L'da'as. Also adds the same term as the Chinuch of the Ramban as L'da'as, of intentional. And there is a contemporary Sefer called L'Reach HaKamocha. It's a three-volume set on different Hilchos Benon L'Chavero. And the middle volume, in volume base, he has, I don't know how many questions, quite a few questions that he sent in writing to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. If you've ever seen anything like this, you know exactly what this looks like. Multiple line or paragraph questions with single sentence, if you're lucky, answers. So the Machaber there, if you're interested in letters, in question Chavav, asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky at this point, is that a good diuk? And if it's a good diuk, isn't it surprising? After all, don't we have a notion in Kol Torah Kula that there's mazid? But there's also something called shogeg. Yet these were shown, and it seems to be meduyok, that it's only bemazed, it can't exist by definition without it. So the quote from Chaim Kanievsky was basically, "Ein chanami kach kotzav b'Torah." Now, I'm not sure what he meant. I'm not sure what if the Mechaber understood what he meant. I think the way the Mechaber hints that he explains this, again, it's hard to know what Chaim Kanievsky meant in his inimitable fashion, but I think there is a certain, I'll give you an example, and just point out, in that same Sefer, he had some occurrence we wanted to suggest, that even if that's true, that you're not over b'shogeg, let's take an example. You know, you said something well-meaning, but it was taken the wrong way and someone's hurt feelings were hurt. Right? So completely accidental. It's not l'das, even to hurt their feelings. Right? So it sounds like, maybe there's no Avera, maybe there's some Avera, but it's not a Nos Dvarim. A Nos Dvarim has to be Ladasi. You didn't do it intentionally. You weren't trying to hurt them. So I think my own understanding of why this would be so, I'll give you the following illustration. I once had a Chavrusa. I was blessed for many years, year after year, with like incredible Chavrusas. But in hindsight, there's a question. The most brilliant was this one. And because he was so brilliant, in hindsight, I could see that maybe I wasn't the best chavrusa for him. But we did learn, we accomplished a lot. And 3/4, or maybe 4/5 through the year, I found out from a third person in our general chabura that next year he would be learning with my chavrusa. He assumed that I knew already that we weren't learning together. I was very hurt. Now, I didn't necessarily blame that person. That was a complete mistake. He did hurt me, but he had no way of knowing. He thought I knew already. So I said something to my chavrusa. So he looked at me and he said, you know, things have been going okay, but not great. I thought it was obvious that, you know, we probably wouldn't be learning together next year. So I said to him, I believe you that you didn't intentionally try to hurt me. I said, but so to speak, it's a Bishop Harusa, I said, Sadian. And there's two types of cases. There are cases where there's really, realistically, no good way to anticipate you hurting someone. It was a mamash an accident. And there, ignorance is a defense. So, but there are other cases, which to me, I said, are so blatant, where you're no longer a b'sheged, you're pshir. Ignorance is not a defense. You shouldn't be ignorant about the fact that you have to tell Harusa you're not going to live with him next year. You shouldn't be ignorant of that. I believe you were ignorant, but that itself was a problem. And he was makabel. So I use that as an illustration. Again, you'll ask me where exactly to draw the line, I'm not sure. But I do think that's part of the issue. Namely, and I think at this very safer, use that example. He said there are certain things where if you call it a pshia, you want to make a mistake, and then something, you know, where you should be culpable, like we have it in Shomrim. Pshia you have a culpability for. You should have known better. So there I could see that you wouldn't say this from Ban, maybe, because that's like, you know, that's almost like it is Ladas. But if it's a real innocent mistake, so I think, just like this person was using it as a defense, and I would have been makabalit in many cases, because when someone tries to hurt your feelings, part of what hurts is that they tried to hurt your feelings. So if they didn't try to hurt your feelings, so it doesn't mean that there's no damage, but it's a completely different parsha. Right, but this is suggesting you might not.
Right.
Even if it's called a shogeg.
Because ones, you don't need a kapara.
Right, but I'm saying, but I don't want to use that term because I think that even if you call it a shogeg, even if you call it a shogeg, the point is, if I lose money because of you, because of a shogeg, that's a tangible thing that you hurt me. Whereas this, it's the whole avera, so to speak, is intangible. The whole avera is the kavana. So it's not like you have an objective avera, and the question is, whether I have culpability or not. Here, hagufa, part of the avera, is the intention. Again, I think that's what Rav Chaim Kanievsky was being maramas to. Again, it's hard in his four-word answer. And we don't have the koyach of a perlau that he did for Rav Sajigon, that he wrote essays based on Rav Sajigon's one words. But I'm trying. I think this is, again, just a tamis mistaber, and I think this may be what Rav Chaim Kanievsky meant. Kach nitna Torah, because part of the avera, or really the definition of the avera, is that intent. Sometimes intent is qualifying an action. Here is the intent that is the avera. Therefore, absent the intent, unless you're poshea on it, absent the intent, there is no avera. Is there some hurt? Maybe, but there is no avera. That's just a suggestion. A related point, which is a fascinating one. Not long ago, I was at a wedding with somebody in a shul wedding. And someone else in the shul told me that now, Kanai Nahara, both of his daughters are married. But there was a shiloh when they're close together in age. The older daughter had even dating for a year. Nothing happened. And now the younger daughter wanted to start dating. And it would be very painful if she ended up being matliach for her older sister. They weren't sure what to do. As it happens, just so you should know, an interesting story, they actually spoke to Shmuel Kamenetsky, this particular family. They are, to this day, even this is years ago, misspoiled about how much time he gave them, how much attention, and how sensitive he was, and how perceptive he was, and questioning the father, and questioning the mother, understanding the personalities of the two girls. It was a very, very illustrative story to hear. And in the end, it happens to be that he said, give it another 6 more months, and if at that point, still nothing, then let the younger girl date. And in the meantime, guttle story, she got engaged, the older sister. But halacha l'maisa, what's the shaila in that story? Would you not potentially be over on Naz Devarim if you'll get the younger sister will get engaged first, or the younger brother, and the older one is jealous and therefore hurt? I phrased that question because that is a shiloh that was in the Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. If you're interested, it's a fascinating tshuva. It's in Evan HaEzer, Chelik Beis Simen Aleph. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was about brothers. And there Moshe makes the following intriguing point, which again has broader implications. But it's interesting to know the background of the particular shiloh. He says, the yisod is, you're allowed to do normal things. You're allowed to do things that are completely innocent and normal, but darach hatava. Someone will decide to become jealous of you and then be hurt that they are not as... Again, think about other cases. Right? Again, leave aside broader issues of conspicuous consumption or ayin hara. You can afford to put an addition on your house. You can afford to redo your kitchen. You can afford to take a vacation. You can think of a myriad of examples. Your brother, your neighbor, your shul, your harusa isn't doing as well, and then they might be jealous, and that might hurt them, they're not doing as well. So you can say that you're over on Anas Varim? Says Ramosha, no. again, he says it in very techno-halachic terms, but I think you could make even a broader argument out of it. But he says simply, he has no heter to be jealous. You have no obligation to twist yourself into a pretzel so that he should not violate his... I'm not talking about that.
You do things that are
going to
cause...
I'm not, but no, no, so I just want you to know, whatever Ayin Hara means, this is...
The reason they say for Ayin Hara is because the
No, I don't think so.
In other words, you're doing things...
And there, what's the therefore? What's the therefore? What? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I admittedly am not the Ayin Hara expert, but I think actually the way I've heard it, the most prosaic definition, I'm sure there are also some esoteric explanations, the most prosaic one... is that not therefore you made them jealous and you hurt them. It's that it's self endangering because their jealousy, etc., in some cosmic kind of way, that may hurt you. Not that you can't make people jealous. Not that you can make people jealous, but it's a danger to you. If you flaunt your wealth, if you flaunt your success, some people will be jealous of you. That may or may not be right on their part, but that fact somehow, which I don't admittedly understand, cosmically, that will somehow potentially hurt you. But I don't think, Moshe is clear. Moshe is clear. When I said Ayin Hara, I just meant, I really almost shouldn't even have said, I meant that, you know, sometimes you shouldn't be flouting your wealth. That's a different, I'm not talking now about how you should spend your money. That's a person-by-person complicated question. But just the bottom line is you'll say, is this Onos Devarim if I do it? Because I make people jealous? So Moshe says no. And again, getting back to the specific example that he gave, if it turns out that the thing in this case was the younger brother gets engaged first, and the older brother has a hard time with it, so no, you the rabbi, you the parent, you the social worker, you the psychologist, whoever, will have to try to help that person so he shouldn't be depressed. But there's no violation by the younger one because you, quote-unquote, put him in that position. You know, you're allowed to live your life.
He's saying, no, the
bar
is not confined to
divorce. No, for sure. It certainly implies to divorce.
I know.
You're saying it shouldn't apply to anything else.
Yeah,
I don't want to say that absolutely. Because you can make... Well, I'll give you as an example the type of things with the Mekach HaMemkar. So if you would create the same problem without speaking, I think it would be a problem too.
Yeah, but that's
no, 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 but that's not Onos Mamon. It's Onos Devarim, the Gemara said, to make a guy think you want to buy something and you really had no intention. So I'm just saying, the Gemara's example was you asked the guy what the price is. But I'm saying if you came up with a case where you did that without asking, I think it would be the same problem. Now again, the truth of the matter is, it does call it Onos Devarim. That is a lot, but it is called Onos Devarim. But again, I'm not sure we have to limit it to literally. You might be right. I'm just saying, it may be a little bit broader than that. It may be a little bit broader than that.
It seems that your example might not fall into the disadvantage
of Onos Devarim. Well, for sure it doesn't. I'll give you... So according to you, Ramosha shouldn't even have a Havim, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying.
But he does. So he says it's okay, but I don't think that he says it's okay because it only applies to Dvarim. Unless that's a tzad. But what I recall about that tshuva, we could look it up again, if we have it here, but is that his main point is, because someone gets jealous is not a reason that you're over on Dvarim. They have no right to get jealous. You're allowed to live your life.
It seems like what you're saying is it's a broader definition of a prohibition against showing someone up.
Hurting someone, right? First of all, it's intentional, and second of all, right. And it could be.
So it's not a devouring really issue.
But it could be if you put on the house to show him up. So maybe that is something. Maybe that is something. But if you're living your life, you're the younger brother, you want to get married, not because you want to embarrass your brother, because you want to get married. So the fact that he may get embarrassed, that he has to be at the wedding, and everyone's going to give him the Emir Hashem by you. Speaking of which, I take this as an opportunity, not speaking to any one of you individually or specifically, please be careful when you say that to people. I had a guy crying to me this week about all the Emir Hashem he gets. And people think that they're giving him some kind of a bracha when they say Emir Hashem by you, so that each time you embarrass him more and more. He's only 25, this fellow. He's not 35. So people don't think. A lot of people don't think. I explained to him, don't be, you know, people, it's just filler conversation. At a wedding, people don't know what to say. They say it to me too, and I'm married 11 years. You know, people see each other at a wedding, they say, Mr. Shem Bayou. But the truth is, he's not the first person who told me this.
But this may be a great example of why, unless it's intentional, it's not an
Yes, I didn't say it's usher to do.
No, I'm not
saying it's an usher to varim, people, unless you consider it Shia. But I don't think it's Shia. I tried to explain to him, people mean well. But the bottom, I'm saying...
Some
that
the, people are open,
absolutely, but yeah, right, because you can't tell how reasonably sensitive one person
right.
thinks it's great.
Right, so I'm telling you, right, so I'm telling you, I've been through the Nisayon of speaking to many people. And if you, be very, very careful.
Yeah, I mean, somebody,
it hurts.
If somebody's 42 or...
I'm telling you, I don't want to get, I don't want to get sidetracked. I am telling you, there are a lot more intelligent ways to say things to people. I am telling you. Even though people mean the best, it is almost always bad at almost any age.
Is that what the minute comes that you should ask older siblings if you can't go out?
No, I don't think you have to. People are sensitive and parents are smart. But at some point, you know, you can't hold back. Okay?
But that's a specific example, not picking on that as an example, but psychologically, if every time you said something that hurt someone would be...
Right. 100% negative. This sefer l'reicha kamocha. That's what he again trying to read into Chaim Kanievsky, and that's what I was trying to suggest also. That's exactly the point. Part of this isser is when you're trying to hurt somebody. I'm not suggesting in this imir Hashem that you're trying to hurt somebody. I'm just giving you, since this mom's on my mind from this week, I'm just telling you, people unintended, but people have to. You got to be careful when you talk to people. That's all. Now I want to mention to you that there's a fascinating machlokas rishonim. About, again, just to be clear, there are no Devarim in the Mecha Chamemkar cases, which we said the two cases were in the Gemara. One is you ask for the price, even though you have no interest in buying it, or you know you send somebody to go buy something somewhere where you know that they can't buy it. You look into the store, right? You go in, right? This is halacha lamaisa all the time. For speaking of which, Chasanim and Kalos, right? Who knows what I'm referring to? You go into Fortunoff's or some fancy store to look at the china. When you've already, meanwhile, on the cell phone, your mother-in-law is at Lower East Side China. So you want to find out the patterns and whatever over there. And then you'll quickly look under the bottom of the plate to see the pattern number. And then you'll call up your mother or your mother-in-law on East Side China to see if in Brooklyn they can get you the deal. To get it cheaper, right? This is Mamish. I don't know, I'm sure there's got to be versions of this in Baltimore. But in New York, and I probably was guilty of this, or some member of my family, myself, when I was a chosen, this happened every single time. And that's just one example where on the chosen akala mindset. But it happens all the time. People go into a store just because they're trying to get information with no intention of buying, because, you know, why should I buy retail, and why should I do this? But they have the more... So that is a major shy, which the Gemara seems to talk about. And the question is, well, we want to figure out how to apply that halacha. What was the reason? Why shouldn't you? Again, the Gemara said explicitly, it's what the rights of the Gemara seem to call it. If you go into a store knowing you're not going to buy, that is an example of an asavara. Why? Right. So that's machlokas rishon.
It doesn't have to be a Yiddish store.
Perhaps. But certainly it applies to Jews, and I think it may apply to non-Jews. For non-Jews, you'll have a Chil Hashem problems. You have other problems. But look, Amisecha, right.
Right.
So the Gemara has, the Rishonim have different explanations. The Meiri has two deos, and there are variations of the two deos of the Meiri in different Rishonim. The first explanation that the Meiri gives, which to me is a shocking one, or, I mean, I guess if it's true, it's easier to understand, but it's a little bit more surprising. I wouldn't have learned the Gemara this way. The first example that the Meiri says is, it's, even though it's called on us Devarim, there really is a hefsid, a concrete hefsid. Why? Because... what's going to happen when you don't want to buy it, right? You spend all this time looking at the china, looking at the washing machine or whatever, and you say, okay, no, you know, I don't think I'm going to take it, but thank you so much for your time. So if he'll say, why aren't you going to take it? What are you going to say? Are you going to say, oh, actually I had never any intention? You're not going to tell the truth, says the Meiri. What are you more likely going to do? You're going to say it's too expensive. So says the Meiri, what's going to happen? He may lower his price thinking that he has to do that in order to get the business, when really you had no intention of buying it. So because he might lower his price, says the Meiri, for no good reason, you tricked him into lowering his price, that is a type of onaso. That's the Meiri's for in the parish Rishon. The truth of the matter is that... no, but he... maybe, okay, so I'll tell you what... okay, something that I have an easier time understanding also is the Rashbam. And this, the Rashbam, I think, really is halacha lamaisa. The Rashbam says, you know what the problem is? Because he could be losing he's losing a customer while he spends time with you. He could be schmoozing up a guy who might want to buy something instead of wasting his time with you who had no intention of buying. That's the Rashbam's...
but that's part of the way business works. I mean, you have to, one store it happens this way, and another store it happens the other way. I mean,
you're saying it's minhag ha'sofer.
It's minhag ha'sofer.
Maybe,
and
okay.
And they all expect it, and you know, you get estimates. You get different estimates.
Oh, we'll get to that. I think there's a good way out of all of this. But just you should that, and I admit, by the way, that I wouldn't have learned the Gemara that way either. But this, you know, that's the Shita and Rishon. The Meiri quotes a second Perish, which is what I would have been more anticipated, which is that Stein, you can make him feel bad. He got excited that he thought he had a sale. He saw a customer walk in. I see this sometimes, you know, like in a strip mall, or sometimes when I'm waiting for a plane, you have some of those, right, there are some stores with just 20 people in the store at one time, and there's always like that one men's shoe store or whatever, where mamas, you see the guy like playing a game on his phone because there's nobody in the store. When you walk in, mamas, the face lights up. If you have, you know, they think they have a chance. If you had no intention, again, if you really thought you were, we're not talking about if you really were considering it, that's obvious. Gemara said clearly you had no intent, you had no, it was not realistically, you never really imagined you'd buy anything. So it says the Meiri, son, you got his hopes up, and you made him feel bad. You made him feel bad.
How about if it's a case like, say, La Marshall, where two people are arranged up, okay, they're going to meet in such and such a store, and such and such a place, and so then is it still us to go to the store, even though you're...
If they think when you walk in, if you'll tell him, and I'll try to get this in a few moments, but if you'll tell him, you should just know, sorry, please, I'm just here waiting for a person, so then I think that's fine. But if you sit there waiting and you let him think that you were coming in to buy, then Taka, that might be a problem. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Find another place to wait. Just as you should know, there's a Sifra on our Parsha, and the Sifra on Bahar, Simin Dalet, or Parsha Dalet, the discussion of this. And as some of you may know, there's two classical Rishonim on the Sifra. One is the Ravid. The Ravid Baal HaSagas has a commentary on the Sifra. And there's the Rash, the Baal Yitosis, the Rash Mishan. So the two classical Rishonim on the Sifra. And they both basically say the same thing. And the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, also in Choshen Mishpat, says this as well. And that is, not just Stam that he'll feel bad, but that when it becomes clear, and I think I've probably been guilty in cases where I think this really did happen, where it's not just that by the time you leave, no, it's part of business, you don't make every sale. They realize by the time you left, and unfortunately we have a Yamakon, they really realize it, because they know about us already. If they realize that you never had any intention. The way you look in the Ravid and the Rash, they say, why do they feel bad? When they realize you never had any intention. Not when you just didn't get the sale, they got upset. When they realize that they had no chance ever, now you'll say, maybe they wouldn't realize. There's a little bit of a Pesach, according to that Sheet and Rishonim. If Taka, they never realized, maybe there wouldn't be a problem. But that's the way they formulate it. And in light of a lot of this, in that same volume of letters or Shilas of Chaim Kanievsky, they asked him, which I've heard many Rabbanim give the same psak, and here they quote it in writing from Chaim Kanievsky, if you go over to them, or when they come over, you're minding your own business, right? You know that happens a lot. You're minding your own business, and they run over to you. So if you say to them, I'm just looking. So Chaim said he thinks then there's really no problem with that. Then there's no problem. Then if they still want to spend time with you because they think they're going to try to make a sale, that's their business. But if you're up front, and I think an example would be you say, I'm just waiting for somebody. So I think that that makes a lot of sense. The Rav Chaim adds, to be choshesh for the Shita on the Shita Rishonim, when you say, I'm just looking, as long as in some, I think this is not a real fear, so I'm not worried about it, but he just adds, as long as he doesn't lose any business even from that. Somehow he got distracted by you and lost the sale or something, which I think is not such a likely problem. Right, if you tell them right away, I'm just looking. I've done that before, and they leave you. They know what that means. Right, they run over. The second you say, I'm just looking, they leave you that second. So I think that, assuming you think that works, I think that's a very practical suggestion. Yes, that's for sure, but I don't think you're mechuyev to make a nominal purchase if you don't want to, unless you are already in trouble. Maybe if you made a mistake, you know.
But you spend time with them.
Right. Again, if you really were had a habit, you know, you might want to buy something, like Alan said. If you go there, just to point to get back to something Alan said, if you go there sincerely, I may buy from them, I may not. I'm looking for prices. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And certainly, even if you don't tell them, let alone if you do tell them. Again, to paraphrase the Gemara, this is Dover HaMosho Lelev. This is Dover HaMosho Lelev. But I'm saying, the Gemara says, if in your heart of hearts you know you have no interest, which is not the same thing as comparative shopping. You're right, of course you can do comparison shopping. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, we have how much time left? 8 minutes. So I won't read it inside. I lost track of time last week. Well, I'll do it again. The continuation, that was just some of the arguments I wanted to give you from the first part of the Gemara. The second part of the Gemara, going off to Nun Tes Amar Aleph, has some of the most famous agaditas that were really of any kind, certainly of Ben Amachavero, which have halachic significance. The question is, how much halachic significance? How much of it is halachic? How much is agadic? two famous Agadotas. One going over to the top of the page is about David HaMelech, how he writes that in every free moment people were making fun of him because of Bathsheba. Even in cases, says the Gemara, when he was learning Hilchos Tumah and Negayim with people, they would go out of the way to embarrass him. What would they say? Out of the way, they would, in the middle of nowhere, they would say, by the way, Reb David, Shlita, what's the punishment for someone who commits adultery? And he knew why they were asking. He knew they were asking because of Bathsheba. So he would respond, says the Gemara, Chenek, aval yesh lo chelek l'olam haba. Someone who's malbim p'necher b'rabim doesn't even have a chelek in olam haba. That is the first story that the Gemara tells us. And the second dramatic story that the Gemara says is the case of Yehuda and Tamar, where the Gemara says, Noach lo la'adam, shi'apil atzmo l'kivshan ha'esh, better that you should throw yourself into a fiery furnace than to be malbim p'necher b'rabim. How do we know this? From Yehuda and Tamar, that if she was being led, the pasuk says, to her death, all she did was send, you know, what was it, the coat and the stick, she sent it to Yehuda, where she could have been screaming, no, 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 I didn't do anything wrong, I was with Yehuda, she didn't do it. Baruch Hashem, the way the story ends, he comes forward and she's okay. But she was willing to be burnt at the stake, Srefa, rather than do it, says the Gemara, no, Adam, Shaplas, Makishanesh. So just very quickly as an aside, a number of Mepharshim, including Shlomo Zalman Arbach and the Tshuva, are bothered by that last story. Is that really true? If you're on trial for your life, and the way you can defend yourself is by pointing out that you have a plausible defense, but that implicates someone else, are you not allowed to make your own defense? How you talking? So there's a few different suggestions. Some answer, well, it's the type of case where Tamar Cheshbon, that shall never be believed. And it's like the equivalent, as we saw, was it a week or two weeks ago, like, you know, an eight echad coming before Beis Din, where all you're doing is basically Lashon Hara. So practically speaking, she couldn't help herself, and that's why she decided to stay quiet. But Luya told you could help yourself. Of course, it's allowed. That's one suggestion. Another suggestion is, well, listen, Tamar got herself in trouble to begin with, because she tricked Yehuda. And she was blessed and honest at the beginning of the story with Yehuda. Shlomo Zalman Arbach quotes these answers, but he, in the end, says, you know what, neither of them are fully sufficient. And if I'm not mistaken, he ends the tshuva saying, you know what, I don't have a full answer to this question.
Tamar didn't tend herself. She gave Yehuda the apathology took knowledge, but he did.
What she had before him.
She
didn't come out and say anything. So she didn't come out and say, don't punish me, I was with Yehuda. She didn't do that. So what? Yes, the hint, no one else got the hint but him. Okay. So he was excited for coming forward at that point. We give him credit for that. This is Bab Mitzia and Chasam Avedis to Nantasam Rav. So that's just an aside with Yehuda and Tamar. In terms of the halacha lamaisa of those two agaritas, so the idea of, just, I forgot, by the way, the line the Gemara uses introduced the David HaMelech case is, Noach, it's better to be over an Eishes Ish than to be Malbim Penechev Rav. So that you won't find quoted in any Sefer Halacha. Pashtus, that really is a guzma. Pashtus, that's a guzma. But here's the question, which is not so simple. What about Noach L'Apil Atzmo L'Kishon Eish? How do you understand that? Is that just a guzma? Is that just an exaggerated rabbinic saying? Or is that Halacha L'Maisa? That seems, huh? So just so you should know, Joey. The riff.
The Rambam says it's hyphenation. The tzicha. He loses his blood from his face.
Slow. The Gemara says, it's true. It's true that the next Gemara, there's tons of great Gemaras here. The next Gemara talks about that when you embarrass someone, blood drains from their face. That's true. But the Gemara says, Nochlo, better you should die rather than embarrass somebody. That's what the Gemara says. So the question is that really true? So the Rif does quote this. Sounds like he may buy it. The Tosfos in Masechta Sota somewhere else, I can't remember, but definitely in Masechta Sota, Tosfos asked the Kasha, after this Gemara, why is this not listed in the Har Yigal Yavors? And what's the Gemara's answer? Tosfos' answer? Very technical. But the Gemara's in Sanhedrin and other places that mention, in Psachim, that mention the Argo Yavors, are only mentioning things which are beferish in the Torah. And this is a hint at that, in a story in the Torah. But what do you see many Achronim Amadayik from that Tosfos? He didn't think that's not true. Technically, it's not listed. But Taka, is it true that you have to throw yourself into a fiery furnace? The Pashas of the Tosfos says yes. Who says it's explicitly Rabbeinu Yonah? Rabban Yonah and Shari Tshuva list Malbim Tehachavim Barabim as someone that you should give up your life rather than do. And L'shitaso, to anticipate what you just said, in Pirkei Avos, Rabban Yonah says that embarrassing someone is Avak Ratzicha. Again, you could say this whole Gemara that talks about the blood drain from the face, maybe it's biologically has some truth to it, but it's also a little bit of a guzma. You see clearly that Rabban Yonah did not think so. Rabban Yonah took both parts of the Gemara seriously and seemed to pass them that way. The Meiri, both in Sota and in Brachos, Beferish rejects all of this. He refers to this Gemara as, quote, Derech Ha'ara and Tzachos. Like a mamish in exaggeration. Come on, says the Meiri, no method. You should take this seriously. It's ridiculous. The Rambam never quotes this. The Rambam does not quote that. Now, the Pri Chodosh, who's famous for his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, has a commentary on Rambam called Mayim Chayim, and he has a whole Torah. He thinks that the Rambam really agrees with Tosfos. But Pashtus, the Rambam doesn't. The reason why the Rambam never quoted it. L'halacha l'maisa, I think everyone holds at the very least it's a Safek, and we don't kill ourselves because of a Safek. And the Chavolim ben Ne'imim of Grabad, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was the Rav, I think in Toronto, before Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. It's a great Rav, the Chavolim ben Ne'imim. He suggests, Joey, you like this? There's L'shitavso, Rambam and Tosfos, about their famous Machlokes, which you spoke to me about last week. Can you volunteer to be giving up your life? Tosfos says, even though we say only three are Yehar Goliabor, when it comes to other 610, you have the Hector to be over. But if you want to die rather than Mechal Jabbos, you're allowed. You just don't have to. Whereas the Rambam in Paratei, because he said it to Torah Paragala, says, on those other 610, if you give up your life, not only was it wrong, Mishchayev Benashi, you did a terrible thing. It's as if you were guilty of suicide, as if you killed yourself. So if Grabard hold, in light of that, when the Gemara says, Noch lo lapil atzmo, how do you understand? So Tosfos comes to that Gemara with their assumption that it's always a possibility that you would do it. That's not a chiddush of the Gemara by Malbim Tehachavim. You could do it even for Yom Kippur, you could even do it for Shabbos. Elamai, it must be this Gemara is telling us one step further, you're even obligated. Whereas he suggests, according to the Rambam, who generally says, Mishchayev Benasho, you're not allowed to do it. Perhaps Rambam would be masking that this is one exception. If this is the one exception, then here, Taka, you don't have to, but at least you're allowed. That's the way the Chavolim ben Imim suggests this. I just want to close by mentioning to you the following interesting idea. To what extent we're talking about, do you equate emotional embarrassment with mamish homicide? So a flip side almost of that nafkamina is a wild statement of Chiddush of the Chachma Shlomo Shlomo Kluger. One time I saw a different wild thing. I happened to be sitting in the antechamber of the office of Yochanan Zweig in Miami. Mamish, when he called me in, it was right on my mind because I had been sitting with a Darche Tshuva waiting for him, and I just seen a Darche Tshuva quoting something wild from Chachma Shlomo, and I told it to him, and he certainly knows more than me, including more Shlomo Klugers than me, and he said, Roy Lamish Omro. He's famous for saying, how should we say, creative things. So in that pattern of creative things, Chachma Shlomo in Chosha Mishpat says the following. Now, not only do we paskin, I think I gave a share about this a year or two ago, not only do we paskin that you do not have to give up your own life, or perhaps even risk your own life, to save another person, L'sam Rodam Reyecha does not require you to give up your life to save them. If you see somebody, mom is drowning, and you're worried you're going to drown, that's just a case. I just read about it online, was it yesterday, 2 days ago? A guy who was a Marine, he jumped in, he saved two kids, and he drowned. He just saved two kids, at least he saved the two kids, but he drowned. Right, so whether that might have made a mitzvah, might have been wonderful, but halpi halacha, it's clear in Shulchan Aruch, in such a case, you do not have to do it. So says the Chachma Shlomo, what if you could save somebody in a case, but you'd be embarrassed? Whatever the case is. He says, Taka, so too. Since embarrassing somebody is like killing them, I don't have to embarrass myself to save their lives. Creative, right? Creative. Except the fact that this is someone's life, not their wallet. Yes, and Hanami. But he says that based on the fact that it's mamash lakratzicha, embarrassing. So just so you should know, the Kli Chemda has a lengthy piece in Parshas Kiseisei taking this to task, and Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach and that same Truva Mincha Shlomo Siman Zion also says this is too creative. Let's put it that way. There's a discussion about what Rabbim is. There's a discussion about what Rabbim is. There's a discussion. We ran out of time, but that's also a good hard one. How did he get to that? I don't remember. It's Simon Vav. He comes to Kitei Simon Vav. The way he says he has chapters. He doesn't go by Pasuk. Okay, good night and a good Shabbos.